Harper Audio presents Force 10 from Navarone by Alistair MacLean. Read by Jonathan Oliver. Chapter 1. Prelude. Thursday. Midnight to 0600 hours. Commander Vincent Ryan, RN, Captain, brackets, destroyers, and commanding officer of His Majesty's latest S-class destroyer, Cirda, leaned his elbows comfortably on the coaming of his bridge, brought up his night glasses, and gazed out thoughtfully over the calm and silvered waters of the moonlit Aegean. He looked first of all due north, straight out over the huge and smoothly sculpted and whitely phosphorescent bow wave thrown up by the knife-edged forefoot of his racing destroyer. 4 miles away, no more, framed in its backdrop of indigo sky and diamantine stars, lay the brooding mass of a darkly cliff-girt island, the island of Keros. For months, the remote and beleaguered outpost of 2,000 British troops who had expected to die that night, and who would now not die. Ryan swung his glasses through 180 degrees and nodded approvingly. This was what he liked to see. The four destroyers to the south were in such perfect line astern that the hull of the leading vessel, a gleaming bone in its teeth, completely obscured the hulls of the three ships behind. Ryan turned his binoculars to the east. It was odd, he thought inconsequentially, how unimpressive, even how disappointing, the aftermath of either natural or man-made disaster could be. Were it not for that dull red glow and wisping smoke that emanated from the upper part of the cliff, and lent the scene a vaguely Dantean aura of primeval menace and foreboding, the precipitous far wall of the harbour looked as it might have done in the times of Homer. That great ledge of rock that looked from that distance so smooth and regular and somehow inevitable could have been carved out by the wind and weather of 100 million years. It could equally well have been cut away 50 centuries ago by the masons of ancient Greece seeking marble for the building of their Ionian temples. What was almost inconceivable, what almost passed rational comprehension, was the fact that 10 minutes ago that ledge had not been there at all, that there had been in its place tens of thousands of tons of rock, the most impregnable German fortress in the Aegean, and above all, the two great guns of Navarone, now all buried forever 300 feet under the sea. With a slow shake of his head, Commander Ryan lowered his binoculars and turned to look at the men responsible for achieving more in 5 minutes than nature could have done in 5 million years. Captain Mallory and Corporal Miller. That was all he knew of them. That and the fact that they'd been sent on this mission by an old friend of his, a naval captain by the name of Jensen, who he had learnt only 24 hours previously, and that, to his total astonishment, was the head of Allied intelligence in the Mediterranean. But that was all he knew of them. And maybe he didn't even know that. Maybe their names weren't Mallory and Miller. Maybe they weren't even a captain and a corporal. They didn't look like any captain or corporal he'd ever seen. Come to that, they didn't look like any soldiers he'd ever seen. Clad in saltwater and blood-stained German uniforms, filthy, unshaven, quiet and watchful and remote, they belonged to no category of men he'd ever encountered. All he could be certain of as he gazed at the blurred and bloodshot sunken eyes, the gaunt and trenched and stubbled grey faces of two men no longer young, was that he had never before seen human beings so far gone in total exhaustion. "Well, that seems to be about it," Ryan said. "The troops on Keros waiting to be taken off, our flotilla going north to take them off, and the guns of Navarone no longer in any position to do anything about our flotilla. Satisfied, Captain Mallory?" "That was the object of the exercise," Mallory agreed. Ryan lifted his glasses again. This time, almost at the range of night vision, he focused on a...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?